And welcome to the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260, sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary. I am your host, Dr. Kevin Passero. Dana Lake, my co-host, will be back next week. I'm going to be with you for the next hour. And don't forget, we're here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m., always covering a wide range of subjects on health, diet, nutrition, lifestyle, and exercise. We always have great special guests when we can and are always trying to deliver you guys some great information regarding health and wellness every week. Don't forget, you can listen to any of our old archive shows by going to www.myvillagegreen.com. And if you click on the radio show tab, it'll bring you to a page where you can look at any of the archive shows that we've done in the past. We've done, I think, over 80 shows now. Been running for almost 2 years. So feel free. You can download them all for free. There's a lot of great topics to listen to. Also, don't forget, if you need any other information about health and wellness, you can always visit the Village Green Apothecary located over on West Cedar Lane in Bethesda, Maryland. They're a health and wellness pharmacy that's been in business in the area for over 40 years, providing people with individualized and customized wellness plans, as well as education about pharmaceuticals, compounding pharmacy, and nutritional products. So today we're going to really hit the ground running. We have a very exciting show. We're going to be talking a lot about eye health. And this is a conversation and a topic that patients ask me about all the time, particularly as we get a little bit older, over the age of 45. People start to notice some definite changes in their eye health as far as vision changes, needing reading glasses, also the development of other eye-related diseases such as cataracts and macular degeneration. So today I have a very, very experienced guest on the phone who's going to help talk to us about some of these common conditions, nutritional factors we can use to address them and support them, some exciting research and studies that are going on, and we're really going to focus on some key nutrients that are extremely supportive for eye and eye health. So Dr. David Nelson is a practicing optometrist with over 20 years of experience in the field of primary care vision. In his career, he's been honored to serve as a president of several different optometric associations, one statewide and one at the national level. 1994, he served as the president of the Wisconsin Optometric Association, and from 2001 to 2002, he was the president of the American Optometric Association, a 33,000-member organization of optometrists. Followed his 8-year service on the Board of Trustees. Regularly writing articles on vision care and eye health, Dr. Nelson gives educational lectures and provides consulting services across the U.S. to assist fellow optometrists in implementing new technological advances in eye care and understanding, here's where he comes in great in our show, dietary, supplement, and lifestyle changes to bring a better quality of life and vision. He graduated from the Indiana University School of Optometry in 1985 and received a diversified master's in business administration from the University of Wisconsin School of Business in 1991. Quite an impressive resume. Thanks for being on the show, Dr. Nelson.
Well, it's great to be here.
Great. Excellent. So I thought we would start off this first segment just sort of talking about some of the basic structures of the eye, because when we talk about specific nutrients, like we're going to talk about later in today's show, I think some of them support different aspects of the eye. So let's, you know, if you can, you are definitely the expert here, give us some overview of some of the different structures of the eye and function so that listeners can have a little bit of a background for the framework of the rest of the show.
Well, as the body ages in general, the eye ages with that. And we find that a number of patients after 50 to 60 years of age suffer from cataracts, glaucoma, macular degeneration, and dry eye syndrome.
Yes. That's great. Can you talk about some of the different like structures of the eyes, meaning what and their functionality, the retina, the what is the disease of the cataracts? What area does it affect? What area does macular degeneration affect, and what functions do these different areas of the eye play in our role of vision?
Sure. The eye is comprised of several basic structures. One is the cornea, which is the clear covering of the front part of the eye. The crystalline lens, which is just behind that, and somebody that you'd be looking at, it would just be behind the iris, which is the colored part of the eye. Mm-hmm. Then the retina is the extension of the brain that serves for the seeing part of the eye that transmits the images to the brain. So cataracts develop in the crystalline lens, which is kind of like an onion. And if you thought about looking at that structure, it would be fairly clear when a person is 20 years of age. And as somebody gets older, it becomes more cloudy, kind of like dirty windows.
Mm-hmm.
And then the person is unable to see through them. When it gets to the point where people are unable to see, then they wind up taking the cataract out. And it is a surgical procedure to remove the cataract. And they put in an implant, which is clear, then the person can see clearly again. The cornea is where people get dry eye, typically because of the tear substances that cover the cornea. The cornea is lacking blood vessels, and so it gets all its nourishment from the tear substances and from inside the eye, the anterior chamber.
Mm. Okay. So let's talk about macular degeneration. What area of the eye does that affect?
Macular degeneration is affecting the area that's called the macula, which is the central spot where everyone is using their eye to see something clearly. So that's the 20/20 spot in the eye. And unfortunately, in some people, over time, because of oxidative damage and in general the family history of the person, they may have a reduction in the ability to see in that area, and they may have an area that's just a blank spot or a dark spot.
Mm, okay. And then from what I know, there's two different forms of macular degeneration. There's a wet form and a dry form, and these may be terms that people have heard of but don't 100% understand. Can you sort of clarify what the differences are between those two? And, I'll let you go ahead.
Sure. The dry form of macular degeneration is by far the most prevalent form, and it's slow to develop and slow to cause problems. 90% of macular degeneration is what we call the dry form of macular degeneration. The wet form is a particularly aggressive form of macular degeneration and results in vision loss much quicker, and it involves confluence of inflammation and a number of factors that wind up taking the vision down much more quickly. But it is now today somewhat treatable if it's caught early. It all starts with an eye exam.
Okay. And it's referred to as wet because it involves the new production of vasculature. Isn't that correct?
That is correct, and that's what causes, the new blood vessels are what causes the leakage and then the scarring.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what types of things might predispose someone to one of these eye disorders? I think family history might have something to do with it. What other factors might someone be considering if they're worried about losing their vision, whether it be to macular degeneration, they have a relative or a family member that they've seen go through it, and they're kind of wondering, well, what are my risk factors for this?
Well, there was a study recently published that showed that 72% of the patients that had macular degeneration had a genetic predisposition for the problem.
What was that percentage? 72?
72%, a very high percentage.
So that's pretty high.
If there's a family history, the closer it is to a brother or sister, mother or father, the more likely are that person should be worried about macular degeneration for themselves.
Huh.
Having said that, though, UV exposure is extremely damaging to the eye. And we're getting a lot of UV exposure today because of the reduction of the ozone layer. And then, of course, we have modifiable habits such as smoking, which increases the risk for macular degeneration, as well as poor nutrition and lack of exercise.
Okay. So I definitely want to get to that in a second because that's a great prelude to some of the other things that we're going to talk about. But let me ask you this question about UV exposure. So do you advocate that people, you know, really be careful about wearing protective eyewear, good UV blocking sunglasses, especially if they're, you know, active or live in areas where they get a lot of UV exposure, like California or Florida or closer to the equator?
No question about it. We recommend sunglasses for all of the patients that we see, and they must be UVA and UVB protective. All of the sunglasses should be in that category. However, some slip through and are not protecting at all, so
okay.
They should be checked.
What are your thoughts about polarization?
We like polarization
as well.
Mentally, yes. It's a wonderful product. It's different than the UVA and UVB because...
Right.
What it does is eliminates glare because of the iodine crystals in the laminate that's made into the polarized lens.
Okay. And then at what age do you think people should start protecting their eyes from UV damage? For example, I have a one-year-old and summertime's coming up and we've been looking at, you know, baby sunglasses.
Yeah, that's actually a very good time to start. It turns out that about 50% of the UV exposure occurs before the age of 18.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is the similar thing that we see with skin cancers. If you're a child and you get a really bad burn or a really bad exposure, it's going to greatly predispose you to potentially developing a skin cancer later in life. Almost a similar, not the same, but similar type of story or accumulation with UV exposure with the eyes in children.
Very much similar.
Yeah, okay, very interesting. Okay, so then let's talk about the smoking and poor nutrition aspect contributing to these diseases of the eyes. I think this is a great segue, Dr. Nelson, to bring up this story, the ARDS study, A-R-E-D-S. Is that how you say it?
We call it AREDS.
AREDS.
Age-related eye disease study.
Great.
Well, you know, there was a recent report in the Archives of Ophthalmology actually just this month that April of 2009, Archives of Ophthalmology, turns out that they're predicting a substantial increase in the amount of macular degeneration between the years 2010 and 2050. And it turns out that their conclusion was that vitamins and other new therapies could reduce the visual loss of patients getting macular degeneration by 35%.
Wow, that's really significant. Is that increase in new cases a result of the aging population and what we're seeing as far as people getting older?
Yes, aging population combined with lack of exercise, nutrition, and not protecting themselves from the sun.
Gotcha. So there's been two ARAD studies, right? There's been the one which was completed and we have the data on, and there's one that's currently ongoing, which is the a second follow-up study. Is that correct?
That is correct. In the mid-90s, the ARADS 1 study was completed, and then the data has been looked at over the last 10 years and sifted through, and they have then now decided to start AREDS 2, which is going to include some different multivitamins.
Okay, go ahead.
The first study included 500 milligrams of C, 400 IUs of E, 15 milligrams of beta carotene, 80 milligrams of zinc, and 2 milligrams of copper. And what that found was that after the end of the study, they found that the reduction of macular degeneration was about 25%.
Just by using those nutrients in the study population?
Just by using a limited multivitamin.
Okay, now I'm going to have you repeat that list of nutrients a little slower.
Okay.
Go ahead.
500 milligrams of vitamin C,
mm-hmm.
400 IUs of E,
mm-hmm.
15 milligrams of beta carotene,
mm-hmm.
80 milligrams of zinc, and 2 milligrams of copper.
Great.
Now the AREDS 2 study has reduced the copper, or I'm sorry, reduced the zinc because of a problem with kidney issues.
Okay.
So, and then as well, beta carotene is not recommended for smokers because there's a slightly greater increase of lung cancer.
Right. So they have pulled that out.
So they've changed the formulation for AREDS 2 just slightly.
Just slightly. And then they've added a couple interesting things, which we are going to talk about. So we're going to need to take a quick break. When we come back from the break, we're going to pick up some of these topics about the ARAD study, and we're going to talk about why some of these nutrients are so important in protecting the eye, the physiological means of what they're doing, and why they create such a great reduced risk of some of these conditions like macular degeneration. So don't go anywhere. This is the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260. When we come back from the break, we're going to pick up this conversation of eye health, and we will be right back. And welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260, sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary. I am your host, Dr. Kevin Passero. Dana Lake will return next week. We are here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m., always covering a wide range of subjects related to health, nutrition, diet, lifestyle, and exercise. And of course, you can always catch any of our archive shows by going to www.myvillagegreen.com. If you're just tuning in and missed the first segment, you can wait about a week or two, and the show should be uploaded onto the Village Green website. Just to update you, we've been talking about eye health, specifically related to cataracts and macular degeneration, and just healthy aging for eyes in general, in addition to dry eyes. And we have a wonderful special guest on the phone, Dr. Nelson, who's a very experienced optometrist with over 20 years of clinical experience. And before we entered the break, we were just talking about the ARAD study, which was the first one, was completed in the mid-1990s and showed a very impressive results. I think it was, what, Dr. Nelson, did you say it was 25% or 35% reduction in the development of macular degeneration?
About a 25% reduction in macular degeneration.
25% reduction with certain key nutrients like vitamin C, vitamin E, beta carotene, zinc, and copper, correct?
That's correct.
Okay, now you said in the ARADS 2 study there are some ones that, it's a new study that, how long has it been running for?
Just a few months now.
Just a few months now. And the completion date is when?
4 years from now.
4 years from now. Okay, so in that study they've modified that a little bit. The zinc is still in there, they've just reduced the dose, is that correct?
That is correct.
Okay. And they took out the beta carotene, and did they take out the copper, or is that still in there?
The copper's still in there.
Okay, and then they've added some other key nutrients. I want to talk for a second about, you know, what is it about these nutrients that can create such a dramatic reduction in this condition? So, and I think this relates right back to also in the first segment of the show that we talked about some of the things that increase the risk of developing these conditions like smoking and poor nutrition. So I think you know where I'm going with this, Dr. Nelson. I'm going to go ahead and let you elaborate a little bit.
Well, oxidative damage is the biggest problem. And the multivitamin that we're discussing, is there are antioxidants. So they're free radical scavengers. And what happens is... the inflammation is created from the oxidative damage that occurs from basically a person living, breathing, and using oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's a natural process. The problem is that it's accentuated in some people that are taking poor nutrition in general, not protecting themselves, and smoking.
Right. Now, let me talk about this, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but I've always understood, we know that there are certain areas of the body that are prone to a higher amount of oxidative stress based on their level of activity. And from what I always understood regarding the structures of the eyes, they are under a higher burden of oxidative stress due to the fact that they are under a lot of influence from the constant barrage of light and UV radiation and other influences, and the process of converting the images that we see to our brain and the activity of the rods and the cones in and of itself makes the eye a place where a lot of free radicals are produced regardless of what you're doing with your diet.
That is correct, because the macula, which we've been talking about as the structure that is involved with seeing and that's vision, has all the cones. And the cones use a great deal of oxygen and have an enormous blood supply. In fact, per square millimeter, the macula is probably the highest metabolically active area in the entire body.
Right, so huge amounts of metabolic activity happening in the eye.
Right.
Which is
going
to which is going to create a lot of oxidative stress.
Correct, and a lot of free radical formation.
Right. So, you know, we have already now we're dealing with a structure of the body that is prone to free radical damage just based on its normal physiological function. Now, you add to that these aspects of smoking, which creates huge free radical loads on the body, as well as poor nutrition, and you can see why you create a potential perfect storm for all this oxidative damage.
That's correct. And the new nutrients that they're going to study, fish oils, EPA and DHA, as well as carotenoids, which are lutein, zeaxanthin, and mesozeaxanthin, are thought to be very helpful in preventing that oxidative damage from occurring.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second. The lutein and zeaxanthins were not included in the first study, is that correct?
That's correct. There was not a commercial preparation available at the time that the ARADS 1 study was done. But there was a dietary survey done on all patients in ARADS 1, and the data was published 2 years ago in the Archives of Ophthalmology, What they found were that the patients who had higher doses of intake of spinach, kale, and other vegetable proteins or vegetable substances that had carotenoids in them had a much reduced incidence of macular degeneration.
Okay, so even just eating through the diet, these types of foods can significantly impact the chances of presenting with one of these conditions.
It takes a fair amount to make enough difference. However, what they found in the data from the first study was that it could make a difference enough to study it, and so that's why they've incorporated carotenoids in AREDS2.
So let's talk about for a second the lutein and zeaxanthines. I mean, from what I understand, these are, for example, the zeaxanthine is a pretty specific type of antioxidant, and what we see when you study structures of the eye is that the eye tends to preferentially accumulate and bring zeaxanthines to that area specifically for as an antioxidant. No other areas in the body preferentially take up or utilize zeaxanthine as much as the eye. Is that correct?
That is true. There are 600 carotenoids found in nature. There are six that are found in the human blood supply, and there are three that deposit in the macula specifically. And those substances are lutein, zeaxanthin, and mesozeaxanthin, which is an isomer of lutein.
So very, very specific for eye health, these nutrients.
It's a 10,000 times a concentration that we find in the blood supply.
Wow. And the foods where we're going to find the highest concentrations for people who like to really focus on, you know, core diet stuff to support their health?
All bright colored vegetables in general, but especially spinach and kale.
So those dark leafy greens.
Dark leafy greens, correct.
Okay, so go ahead.
The mechanism of action that is thought to occur is that those carotenoids deposit in the photoreceptors themselves, the cones, and then block the blue light, UV light damage that would penetrate the eye and hit the retina pigment epithelium, which is the layer underlying the photoreceptor layer. That's the one that breaks down when inflammation occurs and new blood vessels form just underneath there, and that's when we have all of the loss of vision.
So it's almost like a natural internal sunscreen for your eye, blocking UV.
Pretty much like putting sunglasses in your eye.
By eating some good, healthy food.
Correct.
Okay, so let's talk about this other component that they've added to the ARADS, to this, the fish oils.
Yes, the fish oils are, I think, going to make a big difference as well, and there's a synergistic effect, it looks as though, between the carotenoids and the fish oils. But fish oils are comprised of, the active ingredients are eicosapentaenoic acid and eicosahexaenoic acid, EPA and DHA. And when somebody looks for fish oils in the nutrition centers, they need to look for high-quality fish oils that are triglyceride products. We'll talk about that more in just a few minutes.
Yeah, we're definitely going to talk all about how to select a good quality fish oil product.
So eicosapentaenoic acid, EPA, is helpful in the reduction of inflammation. Actually, it helps joint pain reduction, as well as other kinds of itises, reduction of the other kinds of itises, arthritis, gingivitis, blepharitis, meibomianitis, all the itises are reduced with EPA. Now, DHA is the neuroprotection, docosahexaenoic acid, and it turns out that two-thirds of the dry weight of the brain is actually DHA, and more than 50% of the retina cell membranes are comprised of DHA.
Yeah, I mean, I know just looking at pregnancy health and working with any women who are pregnant, and when I was doing all the, you know, looking at what nutrients my wife should be on when she was pregnant, of course, fish oil is extremely important for the proper development of the brain, but also specifically for the eye. And a lot of the research that I came across showed things like improved hand-eye coordination in children who have been given fish oil and other aspects that relate specifically to both of those areas of the body.
That is true, and DHA now is in a lot of infant formulas.
Yes, and most prenatals now that even doctors write prescriptions for usually contain some form of DHA or some type of fish oil supplement, or EPA or DHA.
It's a good change.
Yep, it is a good change. I wish it happened 20 years ago when the science proved it. Okay, so let's see. Let's also talk about, so we know how it relates to the structure, but EPA and DHA we don't necessarily think of as antioxidants. is there any information about how they specifically work to prevent free radical damage, or how they specifically are working to prevent some of the development of these conditions?
Well, I believe it's the reduction of the free radical formation, and as well the intact cell membranes. The body can use any fatty acid, and it typically uses omega-6s because the United States diet is so overwhelmingly omega-6 involved. So omega-6s are like dairy products, meat products, cheeses, and fried foods in general. And the body takes whatever fatty acid it can use for the cell membranes. And the omega-6s are pro-inflammatory, whereas the omega-3s are anti-inflammatory.
So using the fish oil supplement, basically what we're doing is we're changing the dynamics of what's happening in our cell membrane. And this is always something that I'm talking about with people. Your cell membrane is one of the most important parts of your cell. It really does control so many different physiological processes, and the health of the cell membrane is vitally important. So having a diet like Dr. Nelson's talked about that is giving you lots of omega-6s is going to fuel all of the pathways of inflammation. Taking an omega-3 supplement or getting more omega-3s naturally in your diet and reducing the amount of omega-6s will really help to balance the pro-inflammatory to anti-inflammatory balance. And that is why fish oils not just help with this concept of eye health, right? We've just identified some of the science behind why they help prevent macular degeneration and other diseases or concerns of the eyes. But we know that fish oils are so important for reducing any type of inflammation, like Dr. Nelson pointed out, any kind of itis. And itis is just a term in medicine that denotes some type of inflammation. So we know fish oil is helpful for arthritis. We know it's helpful for reducing potential risk of certain cardiovascular problems due to the fact that it reduces inflammation in the arteries and in the blood vessels and in the heart. So fish oil has so many different implications, and this research is just another very, very great telling way about how important it is to incorporate more omega-3s into your diet, whether it be through foods or whether it be through supplementation. So when we come back from the break, what we're going to be talking about is fish oils specifically, because there are some things that people really need to understand when they decide to go to the store and purchase a fish oil, because not all fish oils are created equal. And there are some things that you really, really need to understand to make sure you're getting a fish oil product that is going to give you the benefits that we're talking about, because one type of fish oil may not do that for you while another one may. So we're going to talk about all the things you need to know about, look at, and be aware of when it comes to choosing a fish oil product. So this is Dr. Kevin Passero, the Essentials of Healthy Living, sponsored by The Village Green. We're here on AM 1260 every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. We will be right back from this break with lots of more great information about eye health and fish oils. Hello and welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260, sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dr. Kevin Passero. My co-host Dana Lake will return next week. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. covering a wide range of topics on health, diet, nutrition, lifestyle, and exercise. Today we have been talking about eye health. We've been talking about some specific conditions such as cataracts and macular degeneration and dry eye, which we're going to be covering soon as well. And we've been talking about some of the key nutrients that your body needs to prevent the onset of these conditions. I have Dr. David Nelson on the phone, who's a practicing optometrist with over 20 years of experience, who's been offering us some wonderful insight into some of these issues. We talked about at the beginning of the show that there are some studies Dr. Nelson referred to showing that people with macular degeneration there may be up to a 72% chance of developing it if someone close in your family has. So there does seem to be a strong genetic component. However, there also seems to be some very promising data showing that having certain nutrients in your diet and in your body through supplementation can also dramatically reduce your chances of developing some of these conditions. I think the last study that was done showed about 25% chance. So even if you have someone, a first degree relative who has one of these conditions, there is still a chance for you to be proactive in reducing your risk for developing one of these conditions by doing the right things. And we've talked about vitamin C, vitamin E, zinc. We've talked about foods like spinach and kale. These are all things that contain some of the key nutrients necessary to protect your eye from the free radical damage that we think leads to some of these conditions, specifically macular degeneration. At the end of the last segment, we finished up by talking about omega-3 essential fatty acids, specifically EPA and DHA, which are the very specific omega-3 counterparts that come from fish oil, and how important they are in the cellular membrane health, and how important they are specifically to brain and eye health. What was the statistic, Dr. Nelson, about 50% of the structures of your eye require EPA or DHA?
That's correct. The retina, more than 50% of the cell membrane should be DHA.
So very, very high amounts. So we've talked about why most Americans can be somewhat deficient in these nutrients by eating a diet that's very high in the other type of essential fatty acid called omega-6s, which comes from processed foods. It comes from dairy products. It comes from meat products. It comes from fried foods. It's in many of the different foods that we eat. And a lot of people don't get enough omega-3s in their diet, which mainly, especially the omega-3s that we really need, usually come from fish. And there is not enough fish consumption in the American diet. And there is the issue of what kind of fish are you eating. So Dr. Nelson, do you want to talk about that for a second as far as somebody says, well, I eat fish three times a week. Well, what kind of fish is it? Is it farm-raised? Is it wild?
That's correct. One of the problems is that farm-raised fish are much less expensive, but the farm-raised fish are fed corn products, which are actually inflammatory.
Right.
So they don't develop the amount of EPA and DHA per serving as wild-caught fish, salmon, or other kinds of fish in the wild.
Exactly. So eating, you know, you really need to understand where you're getting your fish. Are they wild caught? Are they farm raised? And that has a dramatic impact on these levels of very important nutrients that have been coming out in the research showing being, you know, so beneficial for different aspects of health. So that is why we talk a lot about fish oil supplementation and why so many people should be on some type of omega-3 supplementation. Now, Dr. Nelson, I think this is a great time to bring up a really important point. When we talk about omega-3s, a lot of people say, well, I take flaxseed oil, or, you know, I'm a vegetarian and I don't want to take anything from an animal product. So I get my omega-3s from vegetarian sources, like flax oil is one of the main common ones. Can you talk about why this is not as good specifically for some of these direct correlations we've seen in research, like needing DHA and EPA for the structures of the eye as taking fish oil?
Well, yes. Flaxseed is not going to convert into EPA or DHA in a significant amount. Most studies say about 10% of flaxseed converts to EPA and DHA, and that's not nearly enough. Unfortunately, as well, flaxseed is very unstable, and it has to be processed or ground right at the time of serving, basically. So a number of problems with flaxseed. It really doesn't address the issue of taking fish oil.
Exactly, because just about all of the research that comes out in regards to these omega-3 supplementation comes out specifically in relation to the EPA and the DHA. And as Dr. Nelson just mentioned, eating flaxseeds, you get only about 10% conversion of the omega-3 in flaxseed to these actual active constituents of EPA and DHA. Versus when you're getting these from fish or an animal source, that animal's body has already done the work of converting the other omega-3s into the EPA and DHA and concentrating it in its flesh and in its fat. And so then when we take in that animal, we get those concentrated levels. So very important to know, as far as food is concerned, what you're getting, how you're getting it, and what types of omega-3s you're getting when you're eating foods to, so you can help make the right choices. So let's move on from foods and let's talk about supplementation, because fish oil supplements are probably one of the hottest supplements on the market. They have a huge amount of sales in this country, and everybody, they're so widely recognized, almost any single person, whether they're into alternative, natural, or complementary medicine, most of them will probably be familiar with the concept of taking fish oil and will have probably heard positive research about taking fish oil. So they're interested in doing it or are already taking it. But as I mentioned earlier, not all fish oil is created equal. So Dr. Nelson, help my listeners understand why some fish oils are so superior to other ones.
Well, it starts out because being a problem because the government does not set any standards, nor does it regulate fish oils.
Or any nutritional supplements, for that matter.
That's correct. But in general, there's not even any standard for fish oils. So, unfortunately, most fish oils are made using an ethanol wash, which creates free fatty acids. Those free fatty acids are easily oxidized and become rancid. So that big jug of junk that most people buy in the grocery stores will have rancid fats in those capsules. That's why people get fish burps from those capsules.
Right. So we just need to, just to reiterate, I mean, the process of oils are very delicate. That is why Dr. Nelson even talked about with flaxseed oils, they're relatively unstable. So you have to process them and consume them very, very quickly. Well, fish oil can be more stable in its natural form. However, we know that these types of substances and nutrients, it's not like a calcium mineral, or it's not like a vitamin B, where they're extremely stable at room temperature for long periods of time. They need to be processed, they need to be handled, and they need to be packaged very carefully. And the standard process that most of companies use to extract these oils from the fish uses these types of things like an ethanol wash, which changes the structure of the oil, making it more unstable than it was in its natural form.
That's correct. And higher quality manufacturers of fish oils use an enzyme, and that creates a triglyceride formation, which is comprised of free fatty acids and a glyceride bone.
Right. So what you have is a triglyceride backbone with the free fatty acids attached. Now, this also it mimics the natural form that our bodies would see these omega-3 fatty acids in if we were to go fishing in Alaska, catch a wild salmon, and go ahead and barbecue it and eat it. So this is what our body is used to seeing. Seeing these structures in the free fatty acid form is not the way that our body is used to seeing these things packaged.
That's correct. And when you look at a label, it will say on it, when you look at the back, EPA, DHA, and it'll say triglyceride formation. It'll have a T or an asterisk that shows you that it's a triglyceride formation. And in addition, you can look at the label to see whether or not it's independently tested as well, or what we call pharmaceutical grade standard, which means that an outside firm has researched and taken a look at the product and made sure what it says on the label is actually what's in the gel cap.
Right. And this also brings up a huge point when it comes to purity, right? So, I mean, we know that our oceans and the fish that are coming from our oceans have potential issues with toxicity. So if something's been third-party tested, one of the things that they'll guarantee is purity. And so talk about some of the things that we want to get out of our fish oils before we put them in our bodies.
Well, there's a lot of toxins out there in the oceans today, and unfortunately, when fish oil is processed, those toxins have to be distilled out. Now, a lot of fish oils have the distillation process in place, and so they've taken out those toxins. That is an important and key part of making sure when you're taking fish oils that you take the right ones. But in addition to that, pharmaceutical grade and distilled product, you also need to make sure you're taking a triglyceride formation.
Right. That will aid in the stability of the product. It will also aid in the potential absorption of the product because, again, it mimics the way that your body would normally see these types of oils. And the way your digestive tract absorbs nutrients, it sees them packaged in certain ways, and that gives your digestive system the cues to go ahead and start deconstructing them and starting the process of absorption. So there's also issues like what temperature is it processed at, right? And what environment is it processed at? So a good quality fish oil will be processed at low temperature and is usually in a nitrogen flushed environment, correct?
That's correct, yeah.
Yeah, because the three things, main three things that will degrade an oil are going to be heat, light, and oxygen. So what they do is they flush all of the manufacturing lines and all of the areas of the factory where the fish oil is being produced with nitrogen to push all of the oxygen out of the way so that you have a very high quality oil. And as Dr. Nelson said, the best way to determine whether or not an oil has rancidity or not is to taste it, right?
That's correct. You can bite the capsule. I wouldn't recommend that in most grocery store fish oils because it will be very rancid and very unpleasant.
Exactly. So the fishier it tastes, the more rancid it is, right?
That's correct. Yeah. And if you take a triglyceride product like a Nordic Naturals product, which is they're all triglycerides, what you'll find is when you bite the capsules, it'll just taste like oil and lemon.
Exactly. And that is so key, so important. And I think I use an example with patients all the time. If you were to go to the grocery store or anybody who's been fishing and you catch a fish and they fillet it right there, when the fish is fresh, you can stick your nose right next to it and hardly smell any fish smell at all. But let's say you left that same piece of fish sitting out on your countertop, unrefrigerated, uncovered for 2 days. I mean, you're going to be able to smell the fish smell before you even open your front door. And that's because the oils in the fish are starting to become rancid by that natural process of exposure to heat, light, and oxygen. So these structures can become very unstable. And taking a rancid oil is about worse for you than not taking any oil at all, correct?
It seems as though that would be the case to me.
Yeah, I mean, these rancid oils can potentially create more oxidative stress on your body. So with fish oil, it's a supplement. A lot of times people will come in and ask me, you know, well, doctor, does it matter what kind of calcium I take? And I say, yes, these are the better options. What about the kind of zinc? Well, there are some better options. What about fish oil? I say, absolutely, it matters what type of fish oil you take. This is a product that you want to spend some extra money on, that you want to spend some extra time in researching what you're getting. Don't be so happy because you went to the big box store down the corner and got a bottle of fish oil the size of a garbage can for $5.99, where I'm recommending, you know, 120 capsules that may cost three times as much. It's because of the quality. And this is one of the supplements where quality is hugely, hugely important. Any other thoughts on that, Dr. Nelson?
No, I couldn't agree with you more. It's really important to take the right kind of thing in the right amount.
Exactly. So let's just sum up real quick. You want to make sure that it's been molecularly distilled to remove impurities, correct?
Correct.
Okay. And a lot of the impurities are going to cite on the label are going to be things like mercury, heavy metals, and PCBs, which are common chemicals found in the oceans and in fish, right?
That's correct.
Okay. We're also going to want to check and make sure that fish oil is in its triglyceride form.
That's correct.
Now, besides Nordic Naturals, which is the brand that I use in my practice and that I always recommend as well, I mean, there are not a lot of other companies that do that, but there probably are. So it's just very important to make sure you look. You know, if you're buying a Nordic Naturals product, you're going to be getting that triglyceride form, which is great. What else do we want to be looking for? What else can you think of?
Well, there are other companies out there that are starting to realize that this triglyceride formation is important. I believe there's some that are made by Carlson that are out there that are triglyceride formations as well.
Okay.
But one of the things that I really wanted to cover was the relief of dry eye using fish oil.
Yes, and we are going to get to that. We need to take a quick break. So when we come back from the break, we're going to talk about this aspect of dry eyes because this is a huge problem for so many people. And as Dr. Nelson's going to point out, using the right type of fish oil supplementation in the right doses with the right types of EPA and DHA ratios can have significant impact on dry eye issues. So this is the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260, sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary. I'm Dr. Kevin Passero. We're going to be right back after this break talking more about fish oils, eye health, and specifically dry eyes with our guest, Dr. David Nelson. All right, welcome back to the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260, sponsored by the Village Green Apothecary. We're here every Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m., always covering a wide range of subjects on health, diet, nutrition, lifestyle, and exercise. I'm Dr. Kevin Passero. My co-host, my wonderful co-host, Dana Lake, will return next week with a wonderful show. You can always listen to archive shows and past shows by going to www.myvillagegreen.com and download those shows for free. Today, we've been talking specifically about eye health. We've been covering topics like cataracts, macular degeneration. We've covered dietary choices and dietary things to help improve eye health. We've talked about specific nutrients and supplements. In the last segment, we were really covering a lot in regards to essential fatty acids, specifically omega-3 essential fatty acids from fish and fish oil. And we talked a lot about how to select a good quality supplement. In these last few minutes, we have a wonderful special guest, Dr. David Nelson, who has been a practicing optometrist for over 20 years. We're going to talk about dry eye issues. So, Dr. Nelson, without further ado, why don't you talk a little bit about what your experience has been with fish oils and dry eye syndrome?
Yes. Dry eye, the reason for it now is thought to be an increase in inflammation. And again, the American diet is 25 to 1 omega-6s to 3s, and omega-6s are, in general, inflammatory.
Does the inflammation have to do with potentially like blocking secretions, or exactly is it have anything to do with that, or is it just inflammation in general?
It's actually inflammation of the tear film itself.
Exactly. Okay.
And so this comes from, in general, systemic inflammation.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that a lot of dry eye syndromes that are related to systemic diseases are related to inflammation, and it turns out that even some of the ones that are not systemically related, in other words, all around the body, are specifically just in the tear film in the eye. And there are medications that are developed for that, like Restasis. Restasis is a pharmaceutical product from Allergan that does work with dry eye, and I use it in our practice. However, I always start with fish oils now because fish oils are a natural anti-inflammatory, and they work probably half the time for half the cost. And when people take about 2,200 milligrams of EPA and DHA, and in the Nordic product, Nordic Naturals product, that's called the Ultimate Omega in nutrition stores and Pro Omega in professional offices. If they take four of those gel caps per day, it only takes about 3 weeks for them to notice a symptomatic relief in dry eye.
And
we've been doing this for 3 years, and our patients are ecstatic about the benefits to reduce dry eye.
Okay, so we're talking 2,200 milligrams of EPA and DHA, right?
Yes, and in the Pro Omega, that would specifically be 1,300 EPA and 900 DHA.
Right, or in or Ultimate Omega is pretty much the same formulation, correct?
That is correct.
Okay, so let's talk about that for a second, because a lot of people get confused. You know, I do this a lot of times in my practice when I give people recommendation for the milligram or gram dosage of fish oil that I want them to take. I'm usually talking about specifically EPA and DHA. Now, they may say, oh, yes, I have a product that I picked up from my grocery store or drugstore that contains, you know, 1,000 milligrams per capsule, and I'm taking two or three a day, so that should be plenty, right?
It isn't the formulation, 1,000 milligrams. Typically, those are 300 milligram capsules of EPA and DHA, 180, 120s, and they would need to take seven or eight of those a day if they could consume them and actually not get the fish burp that we were talking about before.
Exactly. So the 1,000 milligrams is referring to total oil weight.
That's correct. And typically, in fact, they can even have just marine oil. I've seen some preparations that don't even have any EPA and DHA listed on the label.
It's just all other oils, none of the active constituents. So again, very, very important reason why you need to know exactly what you are shopping for. So this is something that you've been using, you've been using that in your practice for about 3 years now, correct?
About 3 years. The preparations have been available for six or seven, but now I've just kind of caught on in the last 3 years to the specific nature of what EPA and DHA does for our patients, and we've been having astounding results. Probably 80% of our patients after taking the 2,200 milligrams a day of EPA and DHA combined dosage, about 3 weeks later, they have a symptomatic relief of dry eye.
Wow. Now, are these patients needing also some support with the pharmaceutical interventions, or does the EPA and DHA pretty much get them to the quality of you know, comfort that they're looking for?
In my clinical practice, it turns out it seems like about 50% are fine just with the fish oils and maybe a tear substitute. Some patients are very symptomatically and as well clinically dry eye. They may have an underlying disease process like arthritis, And they may need more intervention. They may need fish oils plus a steroid eye drop and or a Restasis. And sometimes they need what we call punctal plugs. Some people need all of those things.
Wow, but certainly a great place to start. Almost 80% improvement with a lot of your patients. That is phenomenal. Well, Dr. Nelson, thank you so much for being a guest on the show today. Really offered a lot of really wonderful information. I hope you listeners out there appreciated his time as well. So thank you again.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate being here.
All right, take care.
All
right, so some very interesting information. Just a couple last final notes. Just want to encourage anyone who's interested in learning a little bit more about health and wellness products or interested in taking supplements, you can always feel free to come by the Village Green Apothecary and talk to one of our nutritional counselors. We have an herbalist on staff, several nutritionists. I'm the naturopathic doctor. I'm there every Tuesday, usually busy with people on a one-on-one basis, but I'm always available if you want to call and leave a message. I'm happy to get back to your call as soon as possible. Or you can stop on in, and if I'm available, I am more than happy to speak with you. So it's a wonderful resource. Really encourage you to come by. And again, thank you so much for listening. This has been the Essentials of Healthy Living on AM 1260. We'll be back next Saturday from 10 to 11 a.m. with more great topics for your health and wellness needs.